All right, welcome to session 224, Transitioning LDS Church History Toward Mormon Latino History. This is a same rules apply, right? Turn your cell phones off, all the good stuff. If you're not respectful, we ask you to go. This is a 60-minute session. Did you want to do questions throughout, or did you want to wait till the end?
We can do questions throughout, or okay. We can do it at the end. With me.
Okay, so if you have a question, maybe during the presentation, go ahead and ask away. Over the last 25 years, the Museum of Mormon History of the Americas has dedicated time and resources documenting, preserving, and exhibiting Mexican Mormon history. This has led to the establishment of the Museum of History of Mormonism in Mexico, in Provo, a private nonprofit institution. Come learn about the history and offerings of this unique museum. Fernando R. Gomez was born in Monterrey, Mexico. For the past 25 years, he has directed a nonprofit museum open to the general public free of charge in Mexico City. So you retired from there a couple years ago then? So it's up to 2014. Are you still there?
I'm still there.
Oh, still there. All right. Awesome.
Mexico, yeah, we retired in Mexico.
Okay, retired in Mexico. So I will let you take it away.
All righty. Well, Let me just say a couple of words first. It's very hard to give a presentation on something that's so personal to me, because people will think that, you know, you're patting yourself in the back. But I think it's important to understand what we have done over 25 years. I was asked to talk on the work that we have done, my wife and I, over the last... Can you turn the lights off, too? I don't think we need the lights. On the work I have done, amplifying the history and voices, it's the bottom one right there. Yeah. Of the LDS Latino community. And I'm not quite sure whether I have done that or not. But what has been accomplished is bringing to life LDS Latino history and the voices of those trailblazers that helped establish the church in Latino communities, okay? So the scriptures tells us, behold, there shall be a record among you. And so that's important. Every one of us is required by scripture to keep a record. And we can answer more of that. And what should we put on that record? Well, there's two sides, the personal side and the spiritual side. All the important things, all things which shall be for the good of the church and for the rising generations. So that's the twofold purpose of doing the history. So I've titled my talk, Transitioning LDS Church History Toward Mormon Latino History. Because basically, if we look at the history, the church has never been too gung-ho on other histories. They call us pioneers and things like that. But really, it hasn't never been brought out until we got involved 25 years ago. But the important thing about our project is the miracles of a forgotten history brought to life. So that's basically what we'll be talking about. Now, the church has done a lot of work on documenting, procuring historical things with respect to the restoration. But not everything that they've done, they have been the first. The reorganized LDS Church, way in the late 1800s, the son of Brigham Young said, I haven't for years felt a particle of interest in the old place until late. I feel we ought to take advantage of every opportunity to get a foothold there again. Talking about Illinois and the historical sites there. And, you know, they were the first ones to purchase, since 1908 to 1919, several historical buildings in that state. And so from there, they went in 1918 to start giving tours of what they had preserved. And in 1939, they planned improvements on the properties. And by 1940, grounds were landscaped and interior rooms contained period furnishings. And the church, the LDS church, did not have anything to do, and that's why half and half of that place is between the two organizations. Okay? Now, members of the church were the ones that first started to think about historical sites. There's this brother, Wilford C. Wood, who began on his own to purchase properties related to the church beginnings in the U.S. And I like a couple of words there. At this time, there was little interest in preserving such areas, but Wood's admiration for the prophet Joseph Smith and his appreciation for church early history led him to purchase many of these sites with his own funds. Okay? Now later, there's another one. He was ahead of his time in his love for the past, long before it even occurred to other people that Mormon history sites would be worth preserving. He was actively, tirelessly, and relentlessly pursuing the purchase and preservation of key LDS church histories. And basically, as you read these things, you understand that some of us as members of the church have to initiate. Because even the father of President Hinckley, who served the mission in the back east, he said he maintained a vision of the restored Nauvoo. While there, he tried to convince the leaders of the LDS church to rebuild the Nauvoo temple. And didn't take place until 60 years later, okay, in the year 2000. So we see that some of us members have to do something in order to preserve history in our own countries. So one has to feel history. You have to admire what happened before. You have to appreciate the things that they did for us as members in different countries as well. And you have to have a love for the past. You have to have a vision of what can be done with history. So that's basically an introduction. Okay? You can ask questions as we go along if you like. Now I'm going to tell you a little bit of my own history. My grandmother, Genoveva, met the missionaries in 1923 in Pachuca, Hidalgo. My father was 12 years old at that time, and my aunt was 23. They were baptized in 1925 by the elders that were working there in Mexico. And if you think back, the primitive conditions of the church at that time were pretty severe. Anyway, during our brought-up years, my parents were active in the church. Here's a conference in Monterrey back in 1943 with David O. McKay. And you can see me there on the lap of President McKay. I'm sorry, that's the wrong picture. My mother is on the other side, on the right side with my brother and I. And then on this one, there's the Elder Harold B. Lee in 1944, and I'm in the lap of Sister Lee there, okay? And then there's other people in there, but what I'm trying to show you is that I was part of what was happening at that time. Then here is our family at that time with Harold B. Lee, okay? And here is a conference in 1946, a very principal conference that occurred in 1946 to bring the church together because it was divided for 10 years. And we can go into that subject later. But you see my father sitting behind the prophet George Albert Smith and my mother's hairdo. You can see that also where the yellow dot is. So even the Mexican leaders are here in conference, and I'm sitting on the lap of President Orwell L. Pierce. Okay, so I grew up in that period when the church was divided. And at home, of course, we had conversation. As we grew up, our parents would talk about all the things that they did or did not do. Here's a 1948 conference with David O. McKay when they dedicated the new building in Cuautla, Morelos. And at the bottom of the page is Raimundo Gomez. That's my father. He was one of the speakers. So I know a little bit of the history, okay? So that's my purpose in showing you that. But what motivated us to set up a museum? I'm an electrical engineer by profession. My house is a Wi-Fi, a a home wife, I guess I'm trying to say. And so we had no idea. We had no intention ever of doing any museums of any kind. We had no idea, okay? Yet the church kept telling us on the record, we must keep a history continually of all important things observed and know concerning my church. And I knew a lot. Maybe not all correct at the same time, but we knew a lot. All things which shall be for the good of the church, for the rising generations, and so on and so forth. Okay, and then there's another scripture, that we should be anxiously engaged in a good cause, for the power is in them. And we had no idea where this power came to us from. But there are certain miracles that happen in our lives. This is Elder Jacob the Jaeger. He was in the Quorum of 70s, and I was his companion. I was in the Quorum of 70s in the Philippines for 5 years. We made a lot of visits to stakes for conferences, for training of the brethren. And in 1990, I was about to be released, and I was called to be with my wife, mission president in Mexico. And at that time, my business was in turmoil because I had just purchased a big factory in the Philippines. I was traveling over 100,000 miles going back and forth trying to secure the business before I could comply with the call. And then Elder Diagar said, Fernando, you need to go back to Mexico and get reacquainted with your family. And I said, I can't. I got so many things to do right now. I've been traveling all over from Manila to Hong Kong to the U.S. and back. And I don't have the time. I won't be able to get ready. He says, you must go. Well, that worked on my mind. So I don't have time, but I have to go. He told me. It's inspiring counsel to me that I should go. So this unexpected inspiration resulted in the creation of the Museum of Mormon Mexican History. Okay? We did go to Mexico, my wife and I, one of my sisters, and we met with our cousins there. Most of our parents were already gone. We were there for a whole week. My cousin, who is on the left side, or your right side, he had just returned from Venezuela. He was an industrial engineer, and he was just coming back to Mexico. And in our conversation, he said, you know, I have this big chest full of items that Aunt Consuelo left behind that belonged to the early beginnings of the church. Miracle? Result of inspiration? So we started talking about it, and this is the collection. And this is only part of the collection. But it was significant enough for us as a family to say, what do we do with it? We have no knowledge of putting up any kind of exhibit or how to preserve it or anything like that. And so we started to ponder, we started to pray, and we said, we should send it to Salt Lake. And so we could keep it in the family. And then my wife said, you know, I was in Mentai once, and there was a little room with a little collection. Maybe that's what we should do. Put it into a room and have people come and see it, and maybe we can start to look at it. Well, we started to talk to people. I don't know if you know Arturo de Hoyos. People that had been stalwarts in the church in Mexico in the early years. Arturo de Hoyos' family was baptized in the early 1900s. He was a missionary in our hometown in Monterrey. As we talked to him, he says, Fernando, you are 40 years ahead of your time. It won't work. Okay. We went to Agrico Lozano, another one of those stalwart pioneers in the church in Mexico. He became the first stake president, the first temple president in Mexico that was Mexican. He had written a book in 1983, and he had been doing some collections over the years. And he said, well, yeah, it's a good idea, but I don't want to give up my stuff. I said, okay. So then we kept looking for information. Where could we get information to expand the history? And we went to Evlamantales. And this is very interesting because this is another miracle. In 1972, he was asked by the church, 15 other scholars, to work on a Mormon history in Latin America. And he was to write on the Latin American part of the history. He spent 3 summers in Mexico and South America and Central America, 5 months interviewing Latin American people. He also spent 3 summers researching the LDS archives. And he concentrated on trying to form this history. And in 1978, he had already a pre-book for publication. But the project was canceled and the material was not published. Why was it not published? In 1979, a publisher was interested in the history but declined to publish it because it contained ethnic conflict and leadership struggles in Mexico, which was sensitive to some Mormons. So that shut off the project. In 1987, he had so much pressure from his colleagues that he went ahead and printed it, and I'll get into more of that. As I read the book, I found 12 pages of historical facts that I thought were distorted. So I found him, and I said, "Brother Tullis, I'd like to talk to you about your book. I've read it several times, and I got all of these corrections, historical corrections, that I'd like to discuss with you and see if we can work on it." And he said, "Yeah, we can do that." But more that bothered me was this picture. For scholars that were professional in the 1970s, to put a picture in there with people that were still alive was not good enough for me, because I knew all of those people. I had grown up with their children, and my father was the one on the right side of you, okay? And I said, how can this book be? Where is the history? Where is the credit to these people? And the other thing that bothered me, it was published only in English. So what good did it do for the Mexican people or Spanish-speaking people? None whatsoever. So following the instructions of my wife, we started to look for property. The only local place was the temple. And you can see from this view that it's pretty well developed. And you can see that it's pretty well expensive. So we went around the back of the temple trying to find a little room where we could put this collection. And we couldn't find one. But my wife said, "You know, I was just walking up up front, and there's this place across the street from the temple that's for sale." Now, brothers and sisters, think about it. We had no idea why we would buy a building to put a museum there. But we went ahead and purchased it. And this is what the building looked like. It was a barbecue restaurant. And we said, "Well, we do know a lot of construction because I had built a plant in the Philippines. My cousin had done a lot of work on factories." And we said, "Well, we can try." So my cousin said, "Since you're going on a mission, I'll take care of the construction." So we bought the building outright. We've never owed money to anybody on the project. And he took care of the other construction. He started to tear down the interior and to fix the outside, put a new roof over the properties. And as you can see, eventually it started to take shape. And finally, we had a place of 6,500 square feet of exhibit area. What do we do with that space? Our collection wasn't that big. But the Lord said that the power was in us, so we had to look somewhere. And we started to work together, doing manual labor. This project was done by basically 4 people, okay? And so over the years, we were doing things just as best as we could, trying to learn how to put a museum together. This was our first exhibit area. The walls were still not finished, and we only had some of the paper things that were there, very primitive. And here people were coming and look at the stuff. But finally we had this particular entrance to the museum. Then we contacted Irene Becerril, also a member for a long time. She was an international artist. You said, Brother Gomez, I'll help you. I'm going to make three beautiful paintings for you related to the gospel. This one is titled The Three Josephs. This one is titled Moroni and Mormon giving the plates to his son. And this one is The Two Comings of Christ. Beautiful paintings, very large. And she says, what we do, when you open the museum, we'll put an art exhibit with all my works. So that's what we did. We had 6,500 space. So why not do an exhibit and bring people to see the collection and go from there? So that's what we did. And so this is the interior now. You can see how it is. And this was the big area that we had to somehow produce. And so we started to document history and improve our knowledge on how to put things together, how to exhibit, how to make a timeline, that kind of material. And then we had Brother Call and Brother Brown, also pioneers in Mexico, to help us in cutting the ribbon to the museum. People started to come. We were able to secure Lehi's statue from the artist in Salt Lake City. And our book started to take shape. And we had an exhibit on Joseph Smith and Benito Juarez, who were born 3 months in separate in the 1800s in March.
Excuse me, about what year is this that we're looking at, the progress of the museum?
This is probably around 1998, okay? And then we had the letters between Joseph and Emma translated into Spanish, and we had this exhibit. Where in the world would the people in Mexico ever see the letters of Emma and Joseph in Spanish? Well, the museum, right? We started going around Mexico City to the old places, the early churches, and gathering furniture that had been used in the 1920s and 1930s. And then finally, by the end of 2000, this was our museum. By the year 2000, of course, we were financially getting to a point, so we had to sell part of the property there and concentrate our efforts. We had no help from anybody anywhere. So we said, all right, well, we'll sell the front part of the building and get some funds to continue the project. And so we concentrated on this piece of property here.
Question. I have a question for you.
Yes.
So you had this conversation with President or Elder Yeager, is that right? Or Kager, and he kind of, you know, said, hey, maybe you should think about going, you know, going home. And I'm just wondering about now. So you go to start this project. That seems very important to me to preserve the history of the church. And yet it seems you didn't get any support from the church, either financially or otherwise. And so I'm just wondering about what your experience was, because I know, like, San Diego has a very expensive and beautiful Mormon Battalion Museum with, like, questionable history. So at that museum. And so I'm just wondering, like, the church is putting money into these projects here in the States, and you're not getting support. I didn't know that this existed. Had I known, I was just in Mexico City, I would I didn't know, because we're not talking about.
Well, let me tell you, I don't want to do anything negative. I don't want to say anything negative, because that is not our purpose. Mm-hmm. This is our project. This is our history. This is our legacy, okay? And if people don't want to come in and join us, that's fine with us. We don't have any problem. But I'm going to show you here. This is Harold Brown cutting the ribbon.
Is his wife's name Leonard?
Yeah, this is his first wife.
I know that family.
Yeah. Now, I told you about Tullis. When I talked to him and he agreed that the historical things could be done, I said, all right, now I want to publish it, but I want to publish it in Spanish as well. I don't want to publish it in English. The Americans don't need to know our history. If they like to read it, then they can translate it or what. And so we published 2,000 volumes of Mormons in Mexico by Avlamán Tullis and Los Mormones en México by the museum. Okay? His book was twofold. It was the history, and it was the political side. And I said, I'm not getting into that. I just want to do the history. So we did. And then later on, I wrote my own book. Now, English was my second language. I was not a writer. I never knew how to spell well in English or Spanish at that. But we published a bilingual book that we called The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and the Lamanite Conventions. That was our history, and we presented it in the way properly documented from original documents with pictures that we knew who the people were about. Then we had an exhibit with Arnold Fieldberg. We bought several paintings from the church, about six paintings from the church on the Book of Mormon, and we had a very nice exhibit with people coming to see the exhibit. So you can see the progress that we've made now over the years. There's more people just looking at some of the paintings of Arnold Freeburg. And then we brought together some of the old timers. This is Clark Fales with some of the early members in Mexico. This is the daughter of the martyr in Mexico that was still alive at that time. And we had the anniversary with the 200th anniversary of Juarez and Joseph Smith exhibit. And we had Grant Underwood from BYU invited over. We paid his expenses to go down there and give a lecture on Joseph Smith. And then my cousin gave on on Benito Juarez. Then Liz Lemon Swindle. We bought 22 paintings from her. She went down with her husband. We housed them over there in the hotel and so on and so forth. And she gave two wonderful firesides. Where in the world would people in Mexico have seen this kind of paintings? Then again, Susan Easton Black and her husband. We took her down because we bought 28 paintings of Joseph Smith from Liz Lemon Swindle. And so she went down to give a lecture on Joseph Smith. And then Stan Watts, the sculptor here in Salt Lake, we bought some sculptures from him. This is Joseph on the horse, Nauvoo Legion. This is the great-grandson of Daniel W. Jones, who was in the political arena in Mexico. And he gave a fireside for us as well. This is my cousin talking about the paintings from Irene. One of the greatest accomplishments was getting involved with the educational in Mexico. This is Dr. Hilades, who wrote a book on Rodacanati. And he received the 2000 National Award in Social Science, given out by the National Academy of Science and presented by the Mexican President, Dr. Ernesto Zedillo Ponce de Leon. And we gave him all the information on Rodacanati so that that book could be printed. Now think about that. Back in 1990, we never thought we would publish a book that would have that kind of recognition. And it was very positive, the book that was written. But the most important thing to us in Mexico was the fact that the people were coming to visit the museum. Here's our collection of different items, and looking at the letters. We celebrated the Faith in Every Step with the American flag there in the Utah. People just looking around. 30% of our people that visited the museum in Mexico were not members. So that was a missionary tool as well. But you can see here, we had firesides of different anniversaries. We had a group of 40 people from the States and from Mexico do a tour. These are different religions that visited the museum. Here we're honoring one of the pioneers in Mexico, Kenyon Wagner, who was very instrumental in the schools. Primaries that did different activities. And we would register with all of the organizations in Mexico that cater to museums. Human rights, we gave a talk on religious tolerance. And here's a tour of the group that we took down to Mexico. With this fellow on the wheelchair is Lucas Zúñiga, who was blessed in Mexico in 1883. 1883, excuse me. We went to different cities in Mexico to promote the history. This is the martyr's tomb there in Mexico. And we promoted the research of Mormon history and genealogy. We had a wonderful tour in Tecalco, which is basically the cradle of Mormonism in Mexico. And we had a very big activity because we climbed the Popocatépetl several times to commemorate different events of the historical site in Mexico. People got together, we had dances, singing, all of that kind of material. And our biggest accomplishment is going up the volcano. Moses Tetcher in 1881 went up to dedicate Mexico. We put a plaque, two plaques up there to commemorate the events. Here we are climbing up the hill. And the goal was that little peak that sticks out up there. That's where supposedly Moses Tetcher did the dedication of Mexico. We planted a flag. And these boys, which were younger, got all the way up to the crater and put another plaque up there. So, you know, those are our accomplishments. We, the restoration of the priesthood, we did that up on the volcano. And there's the plaque. So, by the year 2000, we knew that the temple in Mexico had, over 5 years, closed its doors for about 3.5 years, different times. It was very difficult. I guess they have some construction problems with the foundation. And so we felt that it wasn't good enough for us to be able to stay there without having any population coming and seeing the museum. So in 2000, we started to look a place up here in Provo. For 5 years, we looked through, and we finally, by the year 2010, a friend of mine called me and said, "Brother Gomez, there's a building across the street from BYU, which is for sale." I said, "Well, go look at it. This is what it looked like." And this is the outside. And this is the inside. But you know, brothers and sisters, when there's a will, there's a way. Look at that. Even at my age, I started to do the tear out, taking down all of the old stuff. And then I hired a fellow that helped me. And between the two of us, over 8 months. Once that was done, then we started to see what we could do for exhibit. We brought all the materials from Mexico. 60 boxes, all sizes, including a piano and two benches, a pulpit, two pulpits, and the statues that we had down there. 60 boxes. You know how many were open at the border? Zero. Not one box was opened. And so we hauled them on a U-Haul. We had a company take them from Mexico City to the border. And then we hired a U-Haul, put them in there, and put them out, and here they are being unloaded.
We have about 10 minutes for the
limits. I'm sorry?
We have about 10 minutes.
Yes, thank you. And so finally, this is what the museum starts to look today. This was our early first, before we had our stuff from Mexico. This is what we did up here. But eventually, it looks like this. We have three exhibits that are between 8 and 15 minutes that come alive. Now, where did we learn all of this? You know, this is the first Mexican that comes to Salt Lake City in 1884. Talks to John Taylor for several hours. This is Emmett Tenney, who served three missions in Mexico. And when they all come alive, they all talk. Very impressive. They chose this particular meeting that took place 115 years ago. And it gives 140 years of the history of Mexico. And then this is the translation of the Book of Mormon into Spanish. Now, these are some of the early, this is five generations. There's a two that are father and son, and then the son, and then the other one, and then the other one. So it's five generations. These are other people. This is related to Harold Pratt, the one on the blue shirt. This is from the Pies, the people from Pies that are up here. This is by Brother Hagney, who was a missionary in Mexico. That's the mayor of Provo, Utah. There's a sister that works on the customs for the LDS Church. This is some of the early members that started the branch in Salt Lake in Spanish in 1922. We do firesides and family home evenings. And this is our museum.
Will you give us the address?
It's 1501 North Kenyon Road.
Now say that again, 1501.
1501 North Kenyon Road. But more importantly, I will give you a little brochure. Any questions?
Do the Spanish speaking works and branches in the area know about the museum?
Yes, there are 10 works and branches in Provo and 10 works and branches in RM, Utah, all Spanish. I can't hear very well.
Do any of the other branches travel, like do you take youth groups?
I do lectures. I have a lecture in Murray this next month, and I have one in Orem in September.
Well, I was just thinking of some of the rural, there's a pretty strong branch in Delta, Utah, and I'll bet, I don't know if they know about it or not. I think
yeah. Well,
I was there long enough, I think I would have heard if somebody.
Yeah. Quickly, this is our collection. We even have the Book of Mormon 1830, believe it or not. Then we have the two collections of the first in Spanish. We're the only institution that has the two books, and we can have them in exhibit. So we got all kinds of books now that we've collected over the last 25 years. It's just incredible how many doors have been opened for us. So I thank you for coming. I am more than glad to answer any questions that you may have. But it's a very personal project, and I think that the scripture says, a record must be kept among you for its purpose for generations to come. Question?
What relationship do you have with the historical department of the church and, you know, these days?
Like I said before, I don't want to get into the negative.
We do not have a relationship.
I've had friends there that work for the church that have been very helpful. I had somebody at Deseret News before that was very helpful, but just on a one-to-one basis.
Does the temple in Mexico have a regular visitor center? Like
they have a regular visitor center.
But that has nothing to do with the history of the church in Mexico.
About 2000, they put an exhibit on the back part of it, historical.
The church does have, sorry for following up just to make sure I understand, but the church does have a very broad program from the historical department to emphasize local histories internationally. Now
they started in the year 2010 to do a lot of oral histories. And encourage it. They sent Brother Tellers down to Mexico with another Brother Hale down to Mexico. And they spent over a year and a half over there trying to get people to write their histories.
And conducting any oral histories or are you?
I do oral histories and we do written histories as well.
And are they collected at the museum?
Yes, they are collected. Questions? The brochure is there. Our hours are Tuesday to Saturday, 2 to 6. We don't charge admission. People want to donate, that's fine with us. So you're welcome to come. We do firesides and family home meetings as well.
And the entrance is free.
Yeah.
It's important work. Thanks for all your labor.
Yeah. Thank you.
Grassroots efforts like that
Nigeria, I know I have been blessed by the Lord in this fight. There is no reason why I cannot believe that. Doors have been opened for us to get this work done. It isn't us that we did. We have been the instruments, and basically because Elder De Jager said, you need to go to Mexico. That's the reason. And so the Lord has blessed us. Thank you.
Thank you so much.